Castle, episode 653 for November 17th, 2020. Why Aren't Millennials Continuing Traditional Worship of the Elder Dark? By Matt Dovey. Rated R, with a content warning for violence and sexual content. Hello and welcome to Podcastle. I'm your audio producer and host for this week, Peter Adrian Baravesh. This week's story, Why Aren't Millennials Continuing Traditional Worship of the Elder Dark, was written for you by Matt Dovey. Matt Dovey is very tall, very English, and most likely drinking a cup of tea right now. He has a scar on his arm from a ritual performed unto the Watchers just beyond, imploring them for the boon of great knowledge. But all he got were the lyrics to Dashboard Confessional's album The Places You Have Come to Fear the Most, stuck in his head forever. He now lives in a quiet market town in rural England with his wife and three children. And despite being a writer, he still hasn't found the right words to express the delight he finds in this wonderful arrangement. His surname rhymes with Dopey, but any other similarities to the dwarf are purely coincidental. He's an associate editor at Podcastle, a member of Codex and Villa Diodati, and has fiction out and forthcoming all over the place, including all four Escape Artist podcasts, Analog, and Diabolical Plots. You can keep up with it all at mattdovey.com or find him time-wasting on Twitter as @mattdoveywriter. Your narrator for this week is Heath Miller. Heath started his acting career as a child in television. His stage work has taken him all over his native Australia, from classrooms to botanical gardens to historic museums and local theaters. He can be found in recording studios, comedy clubs, television sets, convention centers, and YouTube videos. An actor, director, and master of ceremonies, Heath is a graduate of the Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts, and currently finds himself living on an island off the coast of Portland, Maine. Since moving to the USA, Heath has become an Earphones Award-winning narrator recording audiobooks for Highbridge, Dreamscape, Macmillan, and Penguin Random House, as well as short stories on fiction podcasts including Uncanny Magazine, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, Podcastle, Pseudopod, and Far-Fetched Fable. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy this entire mood.
Why Aren't Millennials Continuing Traditional Worship of the Elder Dark? By Matt Dovey. Read by Heath Miller. In a generational shift that some claim threatens the fabric of existence and the sanity of all humanity, surveys show that worship of the Elder Dark is at a record low for one particular group, millennials. Bob Rollins is worried.
When I was growing up in the 1950s, I made my obeisance before the manifold insanity every night, uttering the invocations to satiate the Watchers just beyond and keep them at bay for one day longer. But young people now aren't prepared to make the necessary sacrifices.
I remind him that human sacrifice was deemed unnecessary and illegal in 1985, and animal sacrifice in 2009.
Well, I don't mean literally, he says, though there is a note of longing to his tone.
Bob is showing me around his inner sanctum, a converted basement given over to the worship and appeasement of the unknowable gods. He's the grand dark supplicant of his local chapter, and is continuing a long family tradition. Men of his bloodline have been bound to the service of the Elder Dark since the days of the Pilgrims.
Our ranks are already thin, he says, resting a hand intimately on an idol of the 10,000 staring eyes. I worry the world I'll leave behind will be overrun by the gibbering horrors of the between spaces, ushering in a never-ending age of nightmares and insurmountable monstrosities. It breaks my heart to think of the Eight Palms golf course getting swallowed by a roiling pit of blackness. Hole five's a real beauty.
In town, I talk with a group of 20-somethings working in the local coffee shop. Aren't they anxious about the impending immolation of mankind and the eternal night of the Elder Dark?
Well, I guess, says Louise, shaking chocolate onto my cappuccino in a cephalopodan design. But it's hard to get worked up about such a distant prospect when I'm mostly worried about making rent next month.
Yeah, agrees Dima, another barista. And even if I had the brain space to worry, I haven't got the room space in my apartment for a shrine. I make my obeisance when I visit my parents at the weekend. But my apartment's so crammed, the shower's in the kitchen. Where am I meant to find the space for the 18 forms of frozen madness?
Not that I have any time for the complete incantations anyway, says Louise. As soon as I finish here, I start a shift at the Midnight Dark Bar on 8th. Do you know how much mess is made by people burying the futility of their infinitesimal existence in drugs and debauchery? By the time I get home from cleaning that up, I've only got 5 hours before I'm back here. It's hard to muster the energy for self-flagellation on 4 hours sleep a night.
These responses may sound cynical and resigned, but talking to Louise and Dima, there is a sense of frustration. They want to be doing more. But some millennials have other reasons for abandoning the worship of the Elder Dark. These old dudes, and they're always old dudes, you notice that? They're all caught up in this spiel, like, if you don't perform the rituals of devotion, then the world will fall to lunacy. And I'm like, dude, look around already. Ace shakes their long dreads dismissively and sips a green tea, looking over the gray ocean from their dilapidated RV. Their parents were members of the ultra-Orthodox Church of the 19th Insanity. Ace left home at 17, sent on their mission to witness the madness of the wider world. It was meant to reinforce the importance of keeping to the convoluted strictures of the 19th Insanity, necessary to resist the influence of the Watchers just beyond. But instead, says Ace, they saw only human madness. Like, all the suffering and hurt and injustice, that's not coming from beyond the pierced veil, you know? It's caused by politicians and corporations on this side. People are blind to the roots of their problems, blaming it all on these creatures they've never even seen, right?
It's sad to hear,
says Kathy Halton, honorary senator for the sunken state of Hagibia.
I represent the many drowned dead, so I know better than most what the cost of failure is.
Senator Halton looks up at the huge oil on canvas that hangs behind her mahogany desk, the sinking of dead men's deeds, that infamous night when 80,000 souls were lost to the sea. The eye is drawn irresistibly to the dark slash that hangs in the sky, the pierced veil itself, and the indescribable creatures of the entropic menagerie that spill forth. It is surely an unparalleled artistic feat to paint a creature that cannot be described, and there is a strange sensation of being drawn into the painting, as if the soul itself is being pulled out through the eyes and reeled into that perversely dark hole on the canvas. Only Halton's smooth voice breaks the spell. She seems used to the painting, immune to its attraction.
Some people are so desperate for a mundane explanation, they'll ignore the evidence of their souls, she says. The irony is many of this country's problems can be traced back to a disturbing lack of faith in the younger generation.
But isn't there an increasing consensus on grassroots social media that neoliberal government policies of the last 30 years are to blame for irrevocably leading us to this point of critical failure, where the very substance of the multiverse is threatened with annihilation by wage stagnation and an untenable housing market leading to unrealistic work expectations?
If only it were that simple, she responds. We're doing everything we can to encourage participation despite the economic downturn, including state-funded glossolalia lessons and mandatory flagellation breaks for government employees. But we can't force a free soul to act.
2 days later, we're standing on the windy beach at Chatham, Massachusetts, for the annual Sunken Memorial, facing the steel-blue Atlantic where Hagibia once stood. Senator Halton leads a group of representatives through the silent evocations of the 18 forms, their dark trench coats snapping in the wind like ravens fighting over scraps.
Two assistants have to help the elderly Health Secretary Johnson through the movements, sometimes physically lifting him to position his limbs correctly. 50 yards away, behind a mesh fence and a police line, there is a protest taking place. I'm not surprised to see Ace at the front, leading a chant of, "We're not insane, we're just mad, we blame you for a world gone bad." "It's all a distraction," they tell me, to a chorus of agreement from their fellow protesters. "They're using the myth of the Elder Dark to stop you noticing their corruption." "Yeah," interjects another protester, her pink hair straggling over a loose-fit, chunky sweater. "Like, did you know they use this stuff to justify some super racist ideas? Most people can't spot the subtext now, but if you read the old stuff, they basically claimed Jews were in league with the Watchers just beyond, right? It's unbelievable." Ace picks up the argument, a real bitterness in their voice. "They, like, try and hand-wave that racism away now, you know? Claim you have to understand it in the historical context. But it just proves how they fit it to their agenda at the time. It's all bullshit. You can't trust them." I go back to see Bob Rollins. He's invited me up for the traditional orgy that marks the approach of Winterdark, more commonly called the fall equinox. He prepares for the night by stripping naked, beating his tattooed skin raw with a branch of Hegibian driftwood, and pulling a tight red hood on that covers his eyes. He offers me a branch and a spare hood, but I respectfully decline. There is 50 or more participants gathered at the edge of town for the ritual, all naked, bar that same red hood. It's meant to evoke a feeling of insignificance, reminding supplicants they are only anonymous flesh to the Watchers just beyond. But the effect is undercut somewhat by small-town America. Everyone is easily identifiable from their voice and body shape, and Bob chats casually about DIY projects and the school district elections as the sun sets. Once dusk grows dark and a chill settles in, Bob climbs onto a flame-lit stage, set up for the event, reminds everyone to stick around for the barbecue afterwards, then begins the rituals of unending vigilance. I find myself talking to a late arrival, Eric Rollins, Bob's son. "I'm only back for the weekend," he explains, shifting uncomfortably. "It means a lot to Dad that I get involved." He's eschewed the naked dedication of his father and kept his jeans on, a single screaming Geshvadath tattooed in shifting ink just below his red hood, dancing wildly in contrast to Eric's diffidence. Presumably his father is grooming him to continue the family tradition? "Yeah, he's really enthusiastic about the whole thing. Dad's worried that if I'm not ready to continue his work, the next time his back gives out, then the Elder Dark will flood the world and shackle humanity to an eternal yoke of madness while he waits on his pain relief prescription. He honestly believes he's the only one holding it back right now." Does Eric think participation is down because people are coming to terms with the history of it and stepping away? I repeat some of the theories I heard at the rally. "Yeah, I've heard those ideas too. I agree with them, to be honest, with the people saying the worship has racist underpinnings, but don't tell Dad. He thinks the texts are sacrosanct, and it's like, if you criticize them, you're criticizing him. But there's a growing online movement to embrace the original truth of the unknowable scriptures, peeling back the layers of human influence and prejudice. We're all just meat to the Watchers after all, regardless of our skin or beliefs, beneath the notice of an unfathomable universe made of madness and unending time. I can show you some really interesting subreddits after this." On stage, Bob is in an awkward crab position, thrusting his flaccid penis towards the night sky and howling in ecstasy. Blood drips from his back, where a bed of nails beneath him pierces his flesh over and over. Volunteers in high-vis jackets wait at the edge of the stage with antiseptic cream, stood before signs reminding participants to practice safe supplication. Eric looks anywhere but the stage as the crowd shrieks back, lacerating their own flesh with a variety of pointed implements. There are spiked paddles in ornately carved mahogany, hand-sharpened sticks of blasted elm, and one Hello Kitty cat-o'-nine-tails. "Dad worries too much, to be honest," says Eric. "I've met a lot of people at college, and at the end of the day, people are decent. They do what they can when they can, even if it's just carving Asherian shapes into their avocados at breakfast. We're not gonna let the world run to shit with shambling horrors at the bus stop and tentacles blocking up the plumbing. We gotta live here too, after all." Eric finally responds to his father's exhortations with a self-conscious howl and pricks his thumb with a pocket knife. Bob looks out from stage and spots his son. He lifts a hand in greeting, then, unbalanced, slips and lands heavily on the bed of nails. His scream of pain is answered faithfully by the crowd, but Eric runs forward and clambers on stage. He eases his father off the nails, and they limp to the side, where a volunteer frantically unpacks a first aid kit. A brief yet intense exchange follows. The body language is clear. Bob wants Eric to finish leading the worship. The crowd is wavering, their flagellation tools drooping like their middle-aged bodies. I see the moment Eric takes the burden on. His back straightens, his jaw clenches, his shoulders square. He's doing a good impression of being ready for this, and I find myself hoping it convinces Bob. Eric strips off and positions himself over the nails. He picks up the chant perfectly from where his father left off, closing out the ceremony with vigor, athleticism, and rather more, shall we say, rigidity than his father could manage. Off to the side, Bob stands with his legs wide as his bleeding scrotum is gingerly nursed by the volunteer paramedic. He's removed his red hood, and he watches Eric lambast the crowd with a final chant of "Hugh! Ktagen Faun!" and receive the answer of "En Gibbeth Valectia." His face shines with paternal pride.
And welcome back. To paraphrase Le Guin, we once believed in the divine right of kings, and now we're just bloody tired. It's in this spirit of exhaustment that I raise my glass to you, friends, with wry laughter and wry beverages, and the ever-present reminder that the old world is an option. It's not the only option. And that was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone here at Podcastle, our assistant editor and host, Setsu Uzume, our forum moderator, Aussie Cat, your co-editors, Jen Albert and Sheree Clark, along with all of our fantastic first readers, Tierney Bailey, Sophia Barker, Matt Dovey, Aidan Doyle, Amelia Harrington, Kai Hudson, Craig Jackson, Julian Jarbo, Shamari Kirkwood, Devin Martin, Julia Pat, Hamilton Perez, Shrikripa Krishnaprasad, Ziv Witties, Eleanor Wood, and Caitlin Zivanovich. Thanks for letting us share another story with you. Podcastle is part of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Feel free to share it, but don't change it or sell it. Our music is by Shiva in Exile. Everything we do on Podcastle is 100% donor-funded, so if you'd like to support what we do, I invite you to join us on our Patreon at patreon.com/EAPodcasts. We'll be back next week with another tale. See you then.